Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. What a rush to the studio once again. My name is Cedric Shabazz, and I'm the host of God Brothers Radio on this beautiful Saturday morning. I believe it's May 16th, the year 2015. And what a very heavy and special show today. First of all, the other day, about two nights ago, my wife asked me to, or she suggested that I should write an op-ed or write a piece about the history of North America, United States, of lynchings. And, you know, at first, my first reaction was I was not interested because I was in shock. The two recent cases of hangings, one in Mississippi and the other one, I believe, was in the state of Georgia, just reminded me about Brother James Byrd back in, I believe it's 1993, or it could have been in, you know, I'm not sure. I don't have all my facts straight, but I do remember Brother James Byrd. I do remember that in East Texas, some cowards that happened to be European American descendants went ahead and apprehended our brother. He was an older man too. I believe he was in his late 40s or 50s. I'm not sure. He wasn't a young man or anything like that, but they tied him up to the back of their truck, and they drug him to death. I heard his arms was missing, and his legs were missing, and you know, his different parts of his body parts were scattered. And you know, that was a very shocking crime, because I was thinking about thought those days were long gone, but excuse me, I had to take a drink of water. But apparently it's not. And what's really disturbing is the fact that nowadays people just seems to be, well, that's just part of American history. Those things will always happen. And you know, and that is probably pretty much true. Lynchings will always happen, especially in the southern part of the United States, because of the historical history of African American slaves and the Confederate flag and Jim Crow laws and the Confederacy and going back to the Civil War days. But in the last 8 or 9 months, and I live in the state of Nevada, which is also known as the Mississippi of the West, and it pretty much still is. A lot of institutionalized racism still exists here. As far as getting along with people or getting along with your neighbor, it's not a problem in Las Vegas. But what is a problem is they still have a system that discriminates, especially against African Americans, and when it comes to employment and opportunities. But also getting back to the subject at matter, James Byrd, those individuals, I think there were three individuals, were sentenced to, I think two of them were sentenced to life in prison, and I believe I think one was sentenced to death. I'm not sure, but it just comes to my mind that in the last, like I said, in the last 8-9 months, I had two incidences out here in Las Vegas when I was walking down the street, and somebody yelled "nigger" out the window. And the first time I heard it was, I could tell it was wasn't a young man saying it. It was maybe an adult male. The second one was just last week. I was on my way to my doctor's office up there in Summerlin. And Summerlin is, the neighborhood Summerlin in the city of Las Vegas is historically, probably doesn't, how should I say, that particular land out there was bought by the famous Howard Hughes. And Howard, if you know anything about Howard Hughes, you know that he didn't like blacks at all. So I really think that if Howard Hughes had his way, or the Howard Hughes Corporation had their way today, if he could legally not have any blacks live in Summerlin, he would. He would. So saying that, I was happened to be in Summerlin, and it just happens to be that I heard somebody yell that nigger as they drove by in their car, of course, on the opposite side of the street. And this time it was, and it wasn't just a comment. It was, the person was really yelling the word at the top of their lungs. And I couldn't recognize the truck or anything. And I think it was a gray truck, but it was going the opposite side direction of me. And it was on the other side of the road. So, and that's what cowards do. And, you know, I didn't do my due diligence on the history of the United States of America, North America, and lynchings of African Americans, but I should have done more history on it before I got on the radio today. So today is going to be more of a probably a little emotional show from a African American man like myself who happens to be 48 years old. So please bear with me as I'm talking on the next 25 minutes of this radio show. I will probably go to Google and look up some things as I go along with the show. I don't know what's been said in the media because I haven't looked into what all the CNN analysts or the MSNBC analysts or the Fox analysts are saying about race relations right now and these recent hangings. And there's a reason why I don't is because I just kind of don't want to get into that subject of race on a real large level. As Americans, we do believe in our heart that the majority of people are not racist, and that goes for all cultures and all religions and all that. We believe, as far as believing in humanity. And as me, as an American citizen, I believe that my fellow American citizens, the majority of them are not racist. But I do believe that there's a problem with our European American brothers and sisters who do not stand up and stand up against their own European American brothers and sisters and say, hey, you know what? That's not cool that you use those racist words, or that should not be tolerated. Now, you know, what I'm saying is what happened to all the John Browns? And people don't know who John Brown was. John Brown was an abolitionist, which means that he was a person that was wholeheartedly against the institution of slavery. And he was of a European descent. And he risked his life on abolishing slavery. So he was the kind of person that would stand up to another European American, I believe, in his family or not, and say, hey, you know what? That language would not be tolerated here, or that attitude would not be tolerated here, or your point of view is your own, but you cannot say those things in my house or anything. You know, the problem is that a lot of European Americans are not standing up to each other. And a lot of that has to do with fear. A lot of it has to do with they don't want to be dubbed the nigger lovers. A lot of that has to do with cowardice. You know, and I think that is one of the main reasons why a lot of these lynchings and a lot of these hate things that happen against African Americans from European Americans are tolerated. And I say tolerated because I the day I wake up in the morning and I see a bunch of European Americans marching in the street and going back to the Civil War days when European Americans by the hundreds of thousands lost their lives because they believed in what they were fighting for to end slavery. Those I believe those people like I said, under John Brown, not a, I don't want to say a crude word of a breed, but I don't know if it's a generation or what it is, but they had backbone, they had character, they had heart, they had soul, and they stood up to their own European Americans down south, and they fought and they bled for us to be free. So we as African Americans, rightfully so, we should be more respectful, and we should talk more about the Yankees and the Civil War that died for us. So I do believe we don't give them enough credibility. We don't talk about them enough as we should as African American community. And I hopefully we change that dialogue in the future and talk about good European Americans who are contributing to humanity in the United States of America. And you know, and like I said, I grew up in a diverse, the most diverse geographical areas in the United States, and that's the San Francisco, Oakland Bay area. And I've been raised up there since I was 2 or 3 years old. I think I was 3 years old when I first moved to my mom first moved us to the Bay Area. And I was pretty much raised up in the first 4 or 5 grades. I was the only African-American in class. There was other, like there might have been one Hispanic brother, one Asian sister or something like that. But I guarantee you, in probably a class of, I don't know, 20, 15, I would say, a class of 15 first graders, I tell you, maybe 20 first graders, three of us was of color. And so that means, you know, I was used to being the only black in class, as you would say. And thing is, I didn't have a problem growing up in that kind of circumstance because kids didn't treat me no different. I didn't know anything about racism until I was 9 years old, when one day I was going to a friend's house, and my friend asked me if I could go to the movies, and I said, well, let me go home and check with my mom. So I ran home, and I asked my mom, can I go over to movies with so-and-so and his family? And my mom said yes, because my mom knew this family. I wouldn't say knew intimately, but knew of each other and knew that I played with their child and their child played with mine. And as a matter of fact, I was invited into their house at 9 years old to share some ice cream and cookies with him and his sister and his mother. And but I never really met his father. And then one day when I was running back to my friend's house to tell him that I'll be able to go to the movies, I was so happy. And then when I got up to the doorstep and getting ready to knock on the door, they had a screen door. The door was open, and I heard his father saying, "I don't want no fucking nigger coming with us or going to the movies with us." And he yelled it like he was yelling at his wife. So right there, I felt something funny in my stomach. You know, I didn't know what it was. I felt sweaty, and I was like, and I just felt sick to my stomach. And I ran home, and I was crying, and I told my mom what happened. And my mom sat me down and explained to me. I don't know what she said to me because I was only 9 years old at the time. All I know is that I was the next day I was kind of, you know, as a nine-year-old kid, you forget. The next day, you kind of just go into the next thing, being a nine-year-old kid. So I forgot all about it. So, but I never forgot the incident. And but it's something that I've never shared with anybody, probably to just recently, maybe to my mother or something in my book. But other than that, my second incident was racist when I was 10 years old. And me and my brother, we were riding our bikes to Kmart. And this was 1977 in Newark, California, and we rode from all the way from where we lived over there by Newark High School back in the day, all the way to Thornton Avenue, which at that time there was a mall or there was something off Thornton Avenue back. No, we were going to Kmart. And then I believe it was on Thornton Avenue in Newark, California, but you know, I can't tell you for sure. And so, you know, I remember that I accidentally or whatever, I actually walked in front of this biker, and he had to maneuver his steps so he wouldn't walk over me. He was a big biker, you know, a Hell's Angels type. I'm not gonna say Hell's Angels because I don't know, but he was a big biker. He very casually said, with no anger in his voice, but he did it so casually, like he was so used to saying it. He was like, "Oh my God, watch out, you little nigger!" And he just sidestepped me and kept walking casually, like it was like no big thing to say the word. And I was stunned. I was like, I was scared. I felt like violence might happen to me because of that word. And you know, going back to understanding that word, I think I was like eight years old. I'm not sure when Roots came out, maybe in 1975 or 76. I was 8 or 9 years old, but I watched Roots, and I didn't understand Roots, but I did understand that what I was watching was violent. It was painful. I remember watching Roots and crying. I remember just remembering the things that stood out to me watching Roots was how European Americans that were portrayed in that film, the slave masters, were so brutal. And, you know, when they whipped us African American slaves, when they raped our women. And I mean, I was 9 years old and I was watching this movie that my parents had no idea that I was watching the movie, because they were, you know, they were watching the movie, but I was supposed to be in bed asleep. But I was sitting on top of my bunk bed and I had the door cracked and I could see perfectly the movie Roots on television in the living room. I didn't hear no sound or no volume or nothing, but I surely felt I understood what was going on, and all I know is I was crying. But I didn't feel a sense of hatred to or nothing like that. It's just, I think I was more like just emotionally hurt. But you know, getting back to the lynching thing, I mean, and I'm going to generalize a lynching because, like I said, excuse me, I didn't do my due diligence, excuse me, like I should have done. So I can't really talk about really the history of North America of lynching, as my title says of the show. But I could talk about lynchings in general, and then, because I plan on doing a part two, North America lynchings or the United States of America's history of lynching of African Americans. So, you know, it's going to be a part two where I can get more analytical, to tell you dates, times, how many Africans got lynched, and, you know, so on and so on. And I plan on doing that episode tomorrow. So please bear me with this episode. Like I said, once again, I'm just going to talk about lynching in general. And the main thing that I don't understand about lynching is that it was used to distill fear into the masses of the people that were getting lynched. It was a tactic used, a fear tactic that was used to keep all the good Negroes or keep the Negroes in their place. And that was very, very true to the root of lynching and historical facts in the United States of America. And you know, and to my knowledge, when I look back at the lynchings of let's say we were supposedly freed physically out of slavery in let me see, I think it's 1865. And I think by 1920s, when the 1920s came on, there was a mass hysteria of lynching of black men and black women in the United States. And a lot of that has, like I said, a lot of had that to do with wanting to keep make sure us Negroes knew our place in society, and that we will always be second class citizens, and basically we will always be slaves or servants to the master. And so they felt that we were gathering together, or we were doing things that was that made them scared and fear, like, you know, then they would resort to violence, and usually it worked. Violence has always worked to a population or people in control, and rightly so, because the institutional slavery, in order to be successful as a slave owner, the tactics they use, like when I was reading the famous John Lynch letters, and it's kind of funny, when John Lynch, and his last name is Lynch, and I never equate to lynching, physical violence of lynching, to his last name Lynch, and I'm not saying that that's where it came from. I'm not sure. I have to do my research on that. But I do have a feeling that after reading the famous John Lynch letters, that basically said that it was a letter that was written to first of all, if you don't know who John Lynch was, John Lynch was a slave owner on a plantation in the West Indies, and he came out with a doctrine, or he came out with a guide called the John Lynch Letters, and supposedly he wrote this and sent this to all the slave owners at the time in the southern part of the United States. And basically, the bottom line is to generalize the John Lynch letters. It basically says that he had a foolproof a system or a doctrine on how to keep slaves perpetuating to be slaves 300 years, for the next following 300 years. And it was interesting because what he said was that, I wish I could get all that information and tell you specifically about the John Lynch letters, but I'll just say this. He said we would be, as African Americans, we would be continued to be slaves for 300 years on our own, in a sense, is what he's saying, even though we're physically free. And the thing is that I think he is right. Because now it is the year 2015, and us African Americans are still going through the same thing that we went through from many years ago. We still have self-hate. We still have jealousy. We still have envy. We still have those things that the devil implemented, so we would always remain a broken people. The way the slave master, how they broke the family was, like, if you think about war, any country, war is about power and control and manipulation. And if you want to conquer a nation or you want to conquer a people, first you have to remove all the male men from that nation. You have to kill all the firstborns. You have to make sure that all the males are not a threat. Once you do that, then you go ahead and what they did is they conquered the females, they raped them, had babies by them, so they basically essentially controlled the females. That's how you control a nation. That's what they do in war. That's how you control the people. You have to capture the female first. You have to make sure you indoctrinate the female so she would not have any respect for her own man. Once you can have the female not have any respect for her own man, then you have destroyed a nation. And therefore, that is what pretty much was generally what the John Lynch letters was about. And it was an interesting scenario. And if that is true, which I hold true to be, then John Lynch is right. We are still in a perpetual of slavery on how we treat each other and how we live to this day. Still, us African Americans are 50% of the federal and the state prisons, 50%, and we only 9% or 10% of the U.S. population of 300 million. What you're saying is there's only 30 million of us African Americans in this country, but yeah, we constitute 50% of the prison system. So therefore, and plus, you got to understand that the ratio of men to women, and as being African American, is like 4 to 1. There's 4 black women to 1 every black man in the United States of America, and that was due to the cause and effect of slavery. So there's more sisters out there who need good black men, but the numbers are not going to support them. It's just a fact because it goes down to numbers. It's not a fact that there's not good black men, us black men. It's the fact is that the most of us black men are pretty much tore up in society. So, you know, and so, you know, I'm looking forward to doing the part two of this show where I'm going to be more analytically, which I mean more analytically, I mean the show I'm going to do tomorrow is going to be more or less on the level that I'm going to give you numbers, times, dates, states, and I'm going to be talking about certain geographical parts of the United States that were racist back then. I'm going to tell you what cities and what states had the most lynchings. I'm going to tell you everything so you can do your own research and see for your own self what's going on. But once again, my name is Cedric Shabazz. I only have 2 minutes, 40 seconds left in the show, so I'm going to end it now. Like I said, I might just go ahead and do a part two a little later, probably about 11:30 today, but I don't know if they'll let me do two shows in a day, so I'm just going to go ahead and post up on tomorrow. So once again, my name is Cedric Shabazz, the host of God Brother Radio, also known as Revolutionary Rodeo. And if you'd like to continue to support God Brothers Entertainment, would you please, I call them donations, but would you please go to Zazzle, Zazzle.com/ Cedric Shabazz, Cedric Shabazz, Shabazz, one word. And you could go there and basically that's a God Brothers Apparel site where I have over 200 independent and individual logos that are on 5,000 products that range from T-shirts, hats, postcards, to coffee mugs, to skateboards, to hoodies, you name it, bags. Like I said, I have 200 logos on 5,000 products available at Zazzle, Zazzle.com. / Cedric Shabazz, Cedric Shabazz, Shabazz, one word. And please, you know, I call them donations because that keeps God Brothers Entertainment in business. And God Brothers Entertainment is soon to be a corporation that consists of 7 to 8 active businesses, ranging from promotional company to record company to publishing company to fashion company to a radio company to you name it. We got about 8 to 10 businesses going on under God Brothers Entertainment. Thank you so much. God bless, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.